challenging Ontario's so-called safe access zones legislation.
The question would be, if you're blanket prohibiting all kinds of talking to people outside of abortion clinics about abortion, what is the connection between some kind of threat and that kind of a law? And if there's no evidence there, then that makes for a pretty good case on our side.
On the feature today, ARPA lawyer John Sikkema on some of the legal arguments against new bubble zone legislation at Queen's Park. In the news, ARPA has two appearances coming up before the Supreme Court of Canada between now and the end of the year. Preparations are underway for the annual ARPA Fall Tour, and a question from our answering machine on education funding.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
ARPA has two appearances coming up before the Supreme Court of Canada between now and the end of the year. Late last month, the organization was given formal intervener status in the so-called Wall case. That's the one involving a Jehovah's Witness congregation in Alberta that disfellowshipped, essentially excommunicated, one of its members. ARPA's Director of Law and Policy, Andre Schutten, says the case is extremely important in terms of setting boundaries around the authority of the state when it comes to church matters.
What the Wall case is all about is whether or not the state, particularly our secular courts, have the right and the authority and the jurisdiction to review and possibly overturn church membership and church discipline matters. So in this case, both the lower court in Alberta and the Alberta Court of Appeal both ruled that when a Jehovah's Witnesses congregation expelled a man for unrepentant drunkenness, that the courts in fact did have jurisdiction to review whether or not that expulsion was proper or reasonable or what have you. Obviously, that has implications for the church generally, because we hold that the keys of the kingdom of heaven include the key of church discipline, excommunication, and those keys were given directly by Jesus to Peter and his disciples, which is the church. That key was not given to the state. The state was given authority. It was given the authority to make sure that justice is done in the land, but church membership is not part of it.
ARPA has till October 5th to file its written submission in that case. Oral arguments will be heard on November 2nd. Just last week, Schutten's team wrapped up its written arguments in the Trinity Western Law School case. He says the argument that's being put forward is quite unique.
ARPA is the only intervener that's arguing exclusively Section 15, which is the guarantee in the Charter that every individual in Canada has the right to equal treatment in law. We argue that when a law society, which is a government body, when it says that Christians or people who associate with Christians through a law program or a university that's distinctly Christian, when their ability to be licensed as a lawyer is curtailed by the law society, then that would be an infringement of the equality right guaranteed by Section 15.
That case is due for oral arguments over 2 days on November 30th and December 1st. It's September, and that means plans are well underway for the annual ARPA Fall Tour. This year's tour starts September 25th, wraps up on October 20th. Hannah Sikkema is coordinating this, and she says the focus this year is on the question of authority.
We all know that we're all under an ultimate authority, and the question that we're posing to our audience is that authority Christ or the state? And we would obviously say Christ. So the theme this year is just to look at the sovereignty of the church versus the state and how we believe that Christ has the authority overall.
There's a couple of changes in the way the tour is being handled this year. In the first place, it's being split into two sections with two different sets of presenters.
This year, we decided to split the tour in half. So we're going to have our executive director, Mark Penninga, and our legal counsel, John Sikkema, cover the western provinces, BC, Alberta, and Saskatchewan. And then our Director of Law and Policy, Andre Schutten, and Grassroots Manager, Colin Postma, will be covering Manitoba and Ontario.
The other change involves ticketing. To minimize lineups at the door, sometimes a couple of hundred people show up for these events. You can now get advance tickets online through the Eventbrite website. We've got a link up to that reservations page and to the full tour itinerary on the Lighthouse News homepage this week. And finally, a question that was posted on our answering machine last week. It comes from Tanya Bauman. She's a listener who lives in the Hamilton area. Her question is about education funding. And we got ARPA's executive director, Mark Penninga, to answer it. First, the question.
Do we want funding from the government for our schools? In Ontario, we fund our own schools, and despite over a decade of a Liberal government and lots of problems in the public schools, our schools are exempt for now. But in Alberta, where there is funding, a similar government has immediately intruded into private schools. Would it be safer to not have the government money and also not have the regulations that come with it?
Given that so many families in the Reform community send their children to independent schools, this is a question that I'm sure many of us have wrestled with. I'm going to answer it with a yes, but. And I'll start with the yes. We sure do need to be aware of the strings that come from any government handouts, whether those strings are acknowledged or not. The more the state is involved, the more it's going to expect to be able to control what it is involved with. We know that the Bible gives the responsibility of educating children to parents, not the state. And we'd be foolish to not realize that the state has very different objectives when it comes to education than we do as parents. And to add to all of this, if Christian families rely on government funding, it makes it really difficult to drop that funding if the need should ever arise. Speaking as someone from BC, I'm confident that many families simply don't budget anticipating such an expense. And that is dangerous. But that is not the whole story. If I would have answered this question 5 years ago, that's probably where I would have left it. However, being involved with the challenges from provincial governments in Alberta, Manitoba, and Ontario in more recent years has made me realize that funding actually plays a very, very minor role in this question about government interference. To be blunt, I don't think most provincial governments really care that much whether independent schools get funding. It isn't their money they're spending, it's someone else's. The far bigger issue is ideology. If a province is being ruled by a premier or education minister that's a secular humanist, for example, you can expect them to use whatever tools are at their disposal to push their ideology on the children of that province. And we can expect that they're going to want to reach the Christian schools too, regardless of whether they're funded. They have other means of authority, including accreditation, for example. They aren't trying to save a dollar. They're trying to push an agenda. And I emphasize this because we'd be remiss if we thought that by not having government funding, we would be protecting ourselves. From what I understand, for example, from Ontario independent schools, they don't get any funding, but they have more state oversight than my home province here in BC, where there is partial funding. See, funding or not, in the cultural climate we live in, we all need to take an active role in protecting our fundamental freedoms, especially when it comes to educating our covenant children.
You can leave a question, like Tanya did. Just go to the answering machine button on the Lighthouse News homepage, and we'll try to deal with it on a subsequent program. Back with more after this.
Across Canada, laws continue to be introduced limiting how parents can educate, discipline, and raise their children. This fall, the Supreme Court will decide whether they have the authority to overturn church discipline decisions. As Christians, how should we respond? Join us this fall from September 25th to October 20th as we speak on the question, who is sovereign? We'll be in BC, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and Ontario. Visit arpacanada.ca for details.
And we're back on the program. The Ontario government is set to introduce legislation this fall that would ban protests outside the province's abortion clinics. The government is justifying the need for this law by talking about some protests that happened outside a clinic in Ottawa earlier this year. However, ARPA's legal counsel, John Sikkema, has done some research on this situation, and he's pretty convinced that the proposed law would not withstand a court challenge on several fronts. John joins me on the program this week. Hi, John. Welcome.
Thanks, Al. Good to be here.
So, safe access zones legislation. It's kind of like BC's so-called bubble zone law. The idea is to prevent protests within a certain distance of abortion clinics specifically. You appeared before a panel of Ontario government regulators last week to talk about this. ARPA had actually written a submission on the issue. Fundamentally, that submission starts with the notion that this proposed law is beyond the jurisdiction of a province to enact. To start, can you expand on that a little bit?
Sure. So what the law in BC does is basically say if you are caught doing certain things in certain places, you can be subject to a major fine or actually go to jail. Obviously, that limits freedom of expression, and there's a Charter of Rights and Freedoms argument to be made there. There's also a division of powers argument. If this law basically condemns certain actions that the government considers a public evil or a threat to people's safety and so on, that is essentially criminal law. To prohibit something, penalize it, and have prison as a penalty is criminal law. And the province isn't allowed to do that. Only the federal government is.
But BC's bubble zone legislation has gone to court, and it was upheld. Was that just a weak court ruling? It didn't go all the way through the process? Because I sense the Ontario government's kind of hanging its hat on the fact that this has already been challenged and found to be okay in British Columbia.
That's right. So the BC history is quite interesting. So BC introduced its law in the mid-90s. Shortly after new abortion clinics had opened following the Morgenthaler ruling. Those clinics actually were subject to large protests that actually obstructed people from entering, locks were glued, and that kind of thing. Now, court injunctions generally took care of most of that, and yet kind of in that moment or responding to that tension, the government introduced its bill. You might say it took advantage of the tension at that time. And the people who challenged that law in the early stages were self-represented. And one self-represented litigant did raise the division of powers issue. It's hard to know exactly how it was argued. I don't have the record of the transcript from that case. But it seemed to be dismissed kind of out of hand with not a great explanation from the lowest court and was never given substantial treatment by the higher courts. In fact, the BC Court of Appeal doesn't even give leave to appeal on that issue. And I suspect that's because there was no one really making good submissions on that at the time.
One of the other cases you make, and as I was reading through the brief, this is sort of where my eyes glazed over a little bit, frankly, and maybe I don't get it. But the bullet headline says, Ontario's proposed law would attempt to tailor criminal offenses to particular settings. I get that in a sense, because the law says you can't protest outside abortion clinics specifically. But what's wrong with that?
Right. So the way the province would try to defend this law is to say, we're not sending people to jail for, you know, a general act that we disapprove of and so on, which would be criminal law. We're basically just ensuring access to healthcare. This is the kind of language that they use. People need to enter clinics. The Ontario government is responsible for providing healthcare. Abortion, we consider to be healthcare. And so if you're getting in the way of that, we just need to make sure that people can access Ontario government services. This isn't about punishing people for something we consider bad. It's just necessary at these particular locations to make sure people can get in the door without being harassed, intimidated, and so on. Now, the fact that the law is applying specifically to activity outside of abortion clinics, although it does have another provision that applies generally to communications with abortion providers anywhere, but the fact that it applies to certain locations, that would be used to argue that the province is allowed to do that. Provinces and towns can regulate activity in the streets. They can prohibit you from holding large signs that might be unsafe for the sidewalk and in the street and things like that. So they would argue that it's regulation of local matters, conduct in the street for the purpose of these services being accessible, the streets being safe, and so on. But if we look at the criminal code, when we have offenses like harassment and intimidation and mischief, the criminal code already is tailored for certain situations and certain people. So towards certain geographical settings, certain offenses have higher penalties if they're committed near a school. The offense of mischief, damaging property, has specific provisions relating to religious property, cultural property, war memorials, things like that. You can have a higher penalty for damaging that kind of property, likely because certain offenses committed in certain contexts and with relation to certain kinds of property are seen as a bigger threat to public peace and that kind of thing. So if Parliament thought it were necessary to say, look, given that abortion is a sensitive issue, if harassment occurs outside of a hospital or a clinic, that can be factored into your sentence. Parliament can do that. If Parliament wanted to say, look, if you're harassing a doctor, that will factor into your sentencing.
So the point is that it's Parliament that has to enact this. It can't be a province that does this.
That's right.
The report concludes with what I consider to be a fairly powerful statement, and I'm just going to read it here. If this government enacts this law, it can expect robust legal challenges. The precedents upholding BC's law are not binding here. Is ARPA already looking at a legal challenge should this pass?
We are. I can't make any promises here, of course, but we are definitely exploring all the possible legal arguments, this division of powers argument being part of that. You know, the situation in BC, which the courts there thought justified that law, they really don't apply here. I mean, the review of every law is going to be fact specific. And in our recent FIPPA victory, the court there looked and said, where is your evidence that this law is necessary, censoring abortion data? And they pointed to a story from over 15 years ago about a violent attack on an abortion doctor, which seemed to have no connection to abortion data. And similarly, certain threats and things that may have no connection to peaceful protesters or people just trying to provide information about pregnancy care, that kind of thing, near abortion clinics. The question would be, if you're blanket prohibiting all kinds of talking to people outside of abortion clinics about abortion, what is the connection between some kind of threat and that kind of a law? And if there's no evidence there, then that makes for a pretty good case on our side.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback?
You can leave us an audio comment by going to our homepage, www.lighthousenews.ca, and clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, lighthousenews@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.